Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Eric Erke, and we will be talking about his new book, The Promise of Wholeness, Cultivating Inner Peace, Mindfulness, and Love in a Divided World. Most philosophical studies of ancient wisdom lack practical application, and many popular psychology books simply skim the surface of the human experience. Licensed clinical social worker and psychotherapist Eric Erke offers a new foundation for profound living based on classical teachings and enriched by modern scientific and psychological breakthroughs. The principles and values it takes to be happy and whole endure, but gentle makeovers are needed to modernize the message. Eric is a psychiatric social worker whose private practice has spanned more than 40 years. Trained in Western and Eastern applied philosophy, he served as faculty for an integrative healing school. His original teachings merge body and mind wisdom and modern psychology into practical strategies that lead to lasting peace and wholeness. You can find information about his book at roman.com, and that's www.roman.com. And you also can find out more on Eric's blog, which is eric.erke.com, and that's ericke.com. So with that, I'd like to welcome Eric to the show. Good day, Eric.
Thank you.
Well, I'm really looking forward to today's show because I think, you know, as I've read through your work and book, it's great to be able to provide practical applications to help people be happier. So I'd like to start with, and I usually like to have my guests kind of give a bit of a background about themselves and kind of what got them to what they're doing now. So would you mind sharing a little bit about your background?
Sure. I've been practicing psychotherapy for 45 years. I started working in this residential treatment center. I also, you know, part of really kind of started my whole career was that I stuttered really badly as a kid. And I remember, you know, just in first grade or kindergarten, like, why do people act this way? And I was looking at the bullies and trying to understand what was happening with them, and then eventually found some solutions what to do with them. So for me, I've been watching people my whole life and trying to figure out why we do what we do and how can you improve the situation.
Yeah, you know, I'm surprised that, you know, that so often in childhood we will display, you know, interests that will in years to come be our profession or things that kind of guide us along our journey. And you know, that particular one, that idea of, you know, trying to find out the meaning, you know, behind why people do what they do. I mean, it's ancient. It goes back to ancient times.
Exactly. You know, why are people cruel? Why do people abuse people? You know, every philosophy, I've tried to blend, I started getting interested in philosophy many years ago because they were trying to find principles that like last through all of time that teach us about happiness. And then all my psychological training was teaching practical tools here now in terms of our science, in terms of how that works as well, too. And then, you know, with all of my background, you know, as, you know, in my religious upbringing, my spiritual training, then what I looked at was like, what's consistent? Because if it's really true, it aligns spiritually, it aligns psychologically, and the philosophy aligns too. And what I watched, you know, is that those principles really do align, and that's what I try to do with my book, is to draw from all those principles and all of those concepts, along with some very practical things that I worked in psychiatric hospitals, I worked in residential treatment centers, and just seeing, you know, hands-on work in terms of, you know, a lot of therapy, what I found was trial and error. You know, I tried a lot of things that didn't work, and then eventually found some stuff that did.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, first of all, regarding, you know, those values, I mean, if there is a core truth, it will, you know, it will stand the test of time. I mean, there's, you know, there, once you get down to, you know, those core truths, and it is amazing to me that, you know, nowadays, you know, science supporting so much of the ancient thought, you know, that kind of gone full circle in a way. When
exactly.
It comes to that.
Yeah, people that are you know, up to date on this, you know, get excited about quantum physics, because it basically shows that our observation of events has tremendous impact upon those events, and that we help create our world here. And so, you know, you have many different you know, phrases we've heard our you know, lifetime, in terms of what goes around, you know, comes around, and there's different phrases that, you know, are basically true. And so if we can learn to apply them with how we think, how we act, you know, I think of, you know, like a three-legged stool that for us to be happy, we have to have our mind really, you know, in the direction that we want to go. We have to have our behavior that supports all of those actions, and our emotions. And when our emotions, really, we really want something, we're willing to do the work for it, we don't have unconscious belief systems that's going to sabotage that, you know, then we can create our world in a really powerful way.
Yeah, I agree. So what was the reason that you selected your book title, The Promise of Wholeness, and Cultivating Inner Peace, Mindfulness, and Love in a Divided World?
Okay, well, thanks. I began to write, and I started seeing techniques that worked, and I was, like, always thinking, oh, this would be helpful. And then I stumbled on this Greek philosopher that a lot of people don't know about. His name is Plotinus. And he basically talked about oneness, and the word that he used in Greek was kenosis, which basically means, you know, that everything in the whole world is, you know, you can see the consistency of it, and there's unity everywhere. And so when I started to kind of dive into a lot of love Western, because most of us, you know, that are deeper in our path have, you know, had a lot of spiritual training. We've done a lot of Eastern philosophy exploration, and the Western guys kind of got ignored. And so then I started taking a look at some of what the ancient Greek philosophers were saying, I was realizing that they were saying really much of the same things as the Eastern guys as well, too. And so the concept of wholeness comes from the Greek word kenosis. And so I took that concept and expanded into the book in terms of how you can have more inner peace, and combining a lot out of the Eastern thought of mindfulness with that, because, again, I'm trying to combine everything and how we can create more love in our crazy world we're in right now.
Most certainly. You know, in you know, that little end in that subtitle, in a divided world, it's, I mean, that is exactly where we're at right now, that everything seems not only to be divided, but also a higher intensity of division.
Yeah, you know, most of us that have been around for a while, I've never seen it this bad. I mean, of all of the decades I've looked at this, you know, what I've heard and read and what I've seen is, when there's more light and more love, there's actually more darkness. And I think one of the challenges we have right now is many people are going deep on their spiritual path, and yet the old and some of the old ways of doing things is actually getting stronger. And so then the polarization about this is the right way, this was the wrong way. We have terrorism, you know, that has kind of been, you know, it's always been around. It actually was around like, a 1,000 years ago, but it's exploded right now, where somehow, you know, all these spiritual masters, you know, preached us about, or talked to us about love, and yet it gets twisted that somehow killing other people somehow is some form of what that master would be supporting, which is just ridiculous, basically.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I agree completely. So now I hadn't heard of Enosis, nor Plotinus, before your book. And they seem to carry pretty much, the major theme of, throughout the book. So that Enosis and the idea of unity,
right,
and wholeness, how does that fit when in a case when we have what appears to be, that division or duality, or a dual kind of existence.
Right.
So how does that fit into what appears to us to be duality?
Well, that's a light question. I'll try.
I'm sorry. I read somewhere in your book that you hope that people ask better questions. So I'm hoping that was one of those better questions.
It is, actually. I spent years of my life trying to answer that. So I'll do the best I can. And philosophers, that's what they've been trying to answer. I mean, like, why do we have darkness? Why is there evil? We call it illusion. I actually don't call it evil. People oftentimes do, but I think of it as illusion. And so, every spiritual master, whatever sort of denomination that they come from, was basically teaching us about love. And yet we have the opposite of love. And in fact, in the Eastern philosophy, they actually talk about it as darkness and light as a continuum. It's not either or. With the West, we kind of think of it, because of our language, that it's either or. So the continuum in terms of the fact, one of the cool things that Plotinus, described, he thought when people made mistakes, it was like we're a perfect statue with mud on it, and all you have to do is wipe off the mud. And to me, that's a really good philosophy about life, that we're basically good people. And yet we have these illusions that we have to master. And in the consistent challenge of seeing what is illusion versus love, because you can think of illusion as the opposite of love or something other than love. And so there's 1,000 different adjectives for that. So the challenge that I think, that each of us are doing, that we're here, is can we embody this love while we're here, and learning what that really is, because we have addictions that give us like short-term love that really don't work in the long term, and we have lovers that can mirror to us versions of love, and then what's the difference between short-term love and long-term? And so oftentimes the deeper challenge for all of us is to find out really what is love. And then one of the ways we find out is actually what it is not. It's the same thing like when kids grow up, like their first stage when they're out of adolescence is they say no to everything, because their first challenge about being self-actualized is to actually learn how to say no, just like a two-year-old child, like recycles when they're in their teens. And then saying no allows you to have a sense of self. And then from those choices, then you can start to learn what really feels good and what doesn't. And we all know we've all made bad choices and stuff, and then we can learn from them. But hopefully we don't then believe that we are, flawed forever or something like that.
Yeah. So one of the things that you talk about in the book about the journey of the soul and reunification with the divine. So
right.
I guess is that kind of, from your perspective, what this human experience is about?
Yeah, I think it's one of the main ideas, which most all of the ancient philosophers, said too, actually, and our spiritual teachers that come here. So I think that one of our challenges is, can we embody our divinity in this crazy human form. And so the challenge of why we have dualism is we have something to choose, because if you're just with our divine form, there's nothing to choose from. And so I think this is a grand experiment, you know, to find out, you know, can we find a deeper form of love by going through all these changes that we go through and embody love while we're as a human, which I think every master has tried to teach us, actually.
Yeah. I've often thought it was, you know, the purpose was that just learning unconditional love. I mean, just
yeah.
You know, the idea of you know, creating loving experiences for the sake of doing it. You know, just to kind of grow ourselves, our you know, big selves, kind of.
Right, and I'm sure each person who has listened to this show right now has experienced the transcendent at some time, or sometimes they really felt in that flow and they acted from their heart and they could see the beautiful things that flowed from that, and there's a richness of that love that, you know, has like an impermanent mark which. Those of us that, you know, feel it, you know, we want to come back to it, and can we do it again, and can we hold that? Because there's a deepness and a richness that we can begin to understand what all of these wonderful people that we admire, that wrote these books, that taught these things, you know, throughout history, that's what they were trying to teach us, that they felt those same things. And how can we as a collective or individually do the best that we can, teach our kids the same thing? And when we can hold that frequency for long enough, it's indelible.
Yeah, I agree. One of the topics that you talk about in the book is the idea of this being an instant world, and that the path from imagination to actualization is quickening. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I've noticed, you know, that as well. And to me, it's just I'm just not everybody seems to feel that, but there seem to be a growing number of people who recognize or at least see that happen in their lives, the imagination to actualization.
Well, I mean, the very quick answer, I can give you a more involved one, but, you know, just look at what the internet did. I mean, something can happen across the world, and we can actually see it instantly, absolutely instantly. And at the same point, feel the agony that somebody else feels within seconds of someone around the world doing it. I mean, that's what quantum physics has been explaining to us, that this is how it works. And people that are extremely sensitive oftentimes feel those things. And so then the challenge, you know, when we can have such quick responses to things, then the challenge for us is to recognize that our creations then are more close, you know, when you can see it happening quicker, you can actually recognize that, what did I do to help create this or not create this or whatever. And so, you know, there's 1,000 books about how manifestation works and how those things work. But I think that with the advent of the internet, with the telephone, because, you know, before that, then people and politicians could make up stories, or whatever person wrote the history then could say, this is what really happened. And so now people can make decisions for themselves because they can see it and experience it. And in that, then we all make quicker decisions. And I think truth has a chance to be more present, and each person can come to their own conclusions about those things.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the thing to remember with that quickening is to be careful of what we imagine, you know, because
right.
in no time at all, it can be, you know, we can manifest even some of our biggest fears.
Yeah, the mistake that people that are beginning on their path, that if they happen to have like a dysfunctional thought, they sometimes get afraid that it's going to happen, you know, right after that. I think you have to hold a thought. You know, in fact, some of the brain research, you know, like if you hold the thought between 5 and 17 seconds, the and whatever thought it is, you're remembering something, a depression from, you know, some time ago. You hold that thought from 5 to 17 seconds, and the neuropeptides start to drop inside your bloodstream, and it informs your cells, now we're depressed. Because our physical body is always in the present, so we can think in the past or the future, but we hold these thoughts, and then the manifestation starts to kick in, like, for example, that example.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're a little past halfway through the show, Eric, so I want to take just a quick break and then do want to invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask Eric a question, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to post them there. And then when we come back from break, Eric, you talk in your book about enlightenment, you know, and that kind of thing is being thrown around a lot. So I kind of want to get your impression of what that is and if it's something that we should be seeking, okay?
Yes.
Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My very special guest is Eric Erke, and we are talking about his new book, The Promise of Wholeness, Cultivating Inner Peace, Mindfulness, and Love in a Divided World. Again, you can find out more about the book by visiting the website, which is roman.com, and that's www.roman.com. And you can also follow and read Eric's blog at eric.erke.com, and that's eric.erke.com. Okay, so with that, we're back. Eric?
Hi.
Hi there. Okay, great. So, enlightenment, that is a topic that, you know, the New Thought, supposedly New Thought, you know, talks about something that we should be seeking to achieve. So, can you tell us your perspective of what enlightenment is, and is this achievable?
Well, I think we've, you know, all seen masters achieve it. I've been around people that have taught me amazing things. You know, how I think of it, though, is that I remember when I was 9 years old and I was just imagining what, Jesus had gone through, and I'm weeping and I'm crying all night in my room about it and praying, you know, and then I felt this transcendence that was like the most amazing feeling. I skipped supper. I didn't want to go downstairs. Looking back, I recognized, what I'd experienced when I read Plotinus, and he described similar experiences, you know, when he was a young man. And what I've watched is that, you know, it's a big fancy word, and it can seem, you know, like you know, who's going to be doing that, you know, and yet what I watch is that when I've experienced something that is profound, I want to do more of it. And so then it's the gradual approximations of doing it again, and then recognizing, you know, one of the illusions, you know, that many people struggle with is, you know, what's the nature of happiness? Is happiness outside ourselves? Is it money? Is it power? You know, is it position? Or is it something that is inside us and our connection to our divine self? So all of the deeper teachers have set us inside, you know, that happiness is an inside job. And so what ends up happening is when you achieve it at times, you just want to do more of it. There's this, effort to want to do more. And I've seen it with many, many, many people. So I think the process is once you get a taste of it, you actually want to do more. If you see it as a baton, you know, death march of horrible tests you have to tackle and horrible tests you have to go through, well, then who wants to do that? So I see it as, you know, whenever I've taken a step forward, or clients or people that I've seen, you know, that they feel that amazing love and they just want to do more. It's just sort of like a slingshot. It slings you into it in a positive way.
Yeah. When you do get those experience those moments, I mean, it seems to me that, you know, over the years that I've had many scientists and people whose belief in, you know, the esoteric, you know, kind of, it wasn't in their sphere until they experienced something that then changed the whole perspective. Because once you experience it personally, it's one of those things you just can't deny. It's like, okay, this happened, so now I need to integrate that into a new way of thinking, maybe.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
And so, I think this has been going on for thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah. You know, and it seems to me that, you know, because one of the things, you know, we're guided by, you know, thinkers around us to reach for that enlightenment, to seek enlightenment. And so many times it seems to be presented as this alternate state of and something that you only experience on special occasions, and it really kind of takes it out of the ordinary, you know, that it's
exactly,
you know, and it seems that, you know, the idea is that it's through the ordinary that we, you know, experience it, and so in a way seeking it is maybe, you know, I mean, in a way, it's kind of foolish because, you know, you either you do or you don't. Or I'm sure you can probably have certain practices that maybe will, like, you know, meditative practices, transcendent kinds of practices that may increase the occurrence. But from what I've seen and experienced personally, is it's one of those things that just happens randomly, sporadically, just enough to give me a taste of really of what I want to do or what I want to experience.
Right, and yet I think that, you know, if we eat well and if we exercise and we combine, you know, behaviors that tend to nurture us, we, you know, work with our illusions, you know, and stuff, because, you know, oftentimes, you know, one of the things that happen, I'll talk to you from a psychotherapist's point of view, you know, but like oftentimes, you know, when people have an unconscious belief system, you know, that's like a saboteur, which is like, well, you don't deserve love. You know, maybe they were taught things when they were younger. They had some trauma. And then they start to explore the transcendent, or they have some really loving events happen to them. And then, you know, I see it as almost like rats crawling out of the woodwork that say, well, you don't deserve this, or they start to have this instinct to sabotage that. It's a very common thing, actually, and so then part of the challenge then is to go find that, and the more of those illusions that you clear, then you can stay in those places longer. You know, that's what all healing and spiritual path, you know, you can name whatever you want to call it, but that's how the path looks.
Yeah, I agree, and, you know, the one thing that I've often, you know, thought that is that the practical application of these ideas and theories, that is me, that's where the value of learning, you know, new perspectives, you know, can come in, is how you can apply those perspectives to your life to make it happier and better. And so from your years of doing work, what are some, maybe a tip or two that you have in your book to help people get a, you know, a little bit more happiness into their life?
Okay. You know, I took a concept from Plato, and he has a theory of forms, and his idea was is that there's some perfected forms, you know, that, and which is what philosophers are trying to do, is always talk about what is the ideal, and so I have 8 chapters, you know, that talk about grace and love and equanimity and illusion, and then at the end of each chapter, I have a summary what that form is, and actually, you know, it's actually like a prayer to yourself almost, where you can meditate with it actually about, you know, how can I create more love, and how can I become grace, how can I you know, overcome my illusion, you know, because part of a really amazing intention is to, you know, hold the intention that I want to see my illusions so I can master them, you know, which means you can bring in trouble, you know, but at the same point, when you can see what your illusion is, then you can go and change it and create something else. So if you hold love for a strong enough time, you can make, because oftentimes it'll happen, for example, I've done a lot of marriage therapy, and people can go through the honeymoon phase where they're deeply in love with this new person, and then as soon as there's a commitment, they don't have to get married, but as soon as there's a heart commitment, then all of the rats crawl out of the woodwork about, you know, well, you know, all of a sudden there's fights, and all of a sudden, well, I used to like this, and now I don't. I want to speak up about it. And the other person's, well, you used to be this nice guy, but now you're just a pain in the butt. And so then all these basic illusions come up, and then the challenge is can we be conscious enough to see that this is actually helpful? That if I can go and see which part is my stuff and clear those things, I can hold this frequency of love. So it isn't always just like doing good deeds. It's having the consciousness that whatever comes my way, what is the most positive way that I can look at this? If something's dark in front of me, how can I be a beam of light? How can I look at, put that beam of light towards myself and say, oh my God, that is my stuff. You know, that's a monkey from my childhood that I haven't healed, and now it's jumping around making a mess, and I have to go release those emotions. And I have a chapter on the brain, and I go through all some of the current thinking about how trauma actually get, you know, especially there's emotional hit with it. It's actually in your right hemisphere of your brain. So reading a book or talk therapy doesn't change those things. So oftentimes you have to do an experiential something to access that part of your brain to find the core belief system that got buried in there. So I have a lot of practical tools too in the book about there's a thing I watched, which I call the primary love template, that when you can begin to understand that as a young child, you can look at mom and dad and see all the good and all the bad that they do, but we hardwire that in as love inside. And so if we don't heal that or find out what's going on with that, we'll draw other people and other relationships that will mirror those same issues to us until we see our participation. Eventually, if our parents tell us that we're a bum, at some point we'll be, if we don't heal that, we'll be telling ourselves that we're a bum, and it'll be easy to tell someone else that they're a bum at the same point. So understanding the sources of our illusions, trying to hold this positive way to take a look at that, when I bring a loving embrace to my own illusion, I can clear these things. I can clear the illusion. Oftentimes love means that I have to maybe release the emotions that were attached to that event. And so then I've got this wise adult part that can go release that, and then the little kid inside who's still got the emotions can release that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. Speaking of emotions, there's one other topic in your book that I'd like you to talk a little bit about because I just found it fascinating, and that's the idea of somatic empathy theory.
Oh, right.
Yeah, can you talk about that? Because you know, when you were talking about emotions, that you know, I think that's got some important information about that.
Yeah. I think about, you know, about a one out of five people are, you know, everyone's real intuitive, but there's some people that are really sensitive. And what ends up happening is as they scan their environment, that they can get great information from people around them. They have a great deal of empathy. The reason why I call it somatic is that some of those emotions that they scan goes physically inside them, actually. So I've had clients that, you know, have these emotional swings. They sometimes, you know, are on medication for depression. I've worked with people with immune problems that are extremely sensitive, huge-hearted people. And as they are around other people, they actually Velcro some of those emotions into their field. It gets processed as your own. And if you do it chronically, you can actually develop symptoms that are physically inside you. So what I've learned, and I was like this myself, I kind of, again, you know, because when I was in the school I was in, I didn't understand why, you know, all of a sudden I would, you know, do, you know, work with someone that had a lot of problems, and then I'm feeling kind of, you know, yucky afterwards. And I had some friends of mine that were going through the same thing. We're trying to figure it out, and so this was like 30 years ago. And so I recognized that you can do visualization techniques and to clear your field and to know which is my energy, which is somebody else's. So in the book, I talk about a test people can take to find out if it's yours or mine, and then solutions as well too for what you can do about it. There's many books about this now. When I was first understanding it, there weren't hardly anything about that, but now there's many books that speak about the same thing right now.
Yeah, there are, but it's, you know, one thing I've noticed is that, you know, sometimes the way an author presents, you know, the material, you know, can just make a big difference. Some people could, you know, relate, you know, to a way an author does it, and, you know, it could be the same topic, but it's all in presentation. And in this particular case, helpful hints, because I've known quite a few people who fall into that very sensitive, empathic kind of state, where they just sometimes gets to the point if they don't have proper boundaries that they sometimes then just retreat from interacting with people just to prevent that from happening.
And actually, that's true. So I'll give you a quick technique right now for like a test. So, for example, if you're at a restaurant, you know, and before you walked into the restaurant and you do like a little scale, like 0 to 10, and you just check in your mood and, you know, let's say you're average, you're like at a 3, you know, it isn't a big deal. You go into this restaurant and then somebody in the booth close by starts to get into a big fight. And the people that are real sensitive, now most people will be concerned, but you know, some people can just continue to eat their meal and it isn't a big deal. But people that are really sensitive, it actually affects your ability to digest the food. And what's actually happening is like psychically scanning what's going on, and you can actually bring some of their frustration, some of their stuff into your field, and all of a sudden your number 3 can go up to a 5. And then if you were to visualize a protective egg and you're in this, you know, really calm protective egg, and you can visualize that and go back to a 3, then that can be a test to find out, oh, that extra couple points that went higher, that's actually those people's stress. It's not mine. Now, if they happen to have an argument that's exactly like your parents fought, then you may have a memory that would be your own memory that could get activated. So that could be a contaminant as well, too. If it's very similar to an old trauma, then you may get a traditional charge from a psychotherapy point of view. But if it's not that, then many people, when they take this test, they can say, oh, my God, you know, I'm doing that a lot, where all of a sudden I walk into a room where all the energy is really high, people are really anxious, and now I'm anxious. And And for them to discover that they aren't anxious, they actually are tracking other people's anxiousness. You're becoming anxious because you're carrying their energy. And you can, you know, visualize a waterfall or some way with intention to hold the intention. If it's mine, let it stay. And if it's somebody else's, let that go. And many people find some great relief from that. And then realize that, oh, my God, I've been doing this my whole life. And maybe that could be why my emotions swing sometimes.
Yeah, that's a good good test. I mean, a good example, you know, for people. I mean, they're very practical, you know, because I've done that myself. I've, you know, gone into places and I'm the kind, I don't like conflict. so when there's conflict around me, it does. My mind would probably go up 3 or 4 points instead of just 2. So. But those are the kinds of things that I, when, you know, that I'm aware of. So when it happens, I do my best to
right. Kind of, here's the good news about that. This is really easy to fix. You know, trying to learn how to handle anger, and that's a much longer road. These fixes can be done within seconds. I mean, you know, the encouraging thing I tell people, you know, is if you're picking up on these things because you're really empathic, then these fixes are really quick, and you don't need to have psychotherapy for this. You can learn these methods and then apply them, and to recognize that you can maybe understand that some of these emotional swings that you have, because, you know, if you've got around a family member who is, you know, not processing their emotions, you're around people that are chronically ill, and you feel their pain with them. You know, like, you know, my mom, when she before she passed away, you know, oftentimes would have a chronic pain. I couldn't stop, because I cared and loved her. You know, when she would wince in pain, I would feel it inside me the second it happened. You know, I couldn't stop that from happening, but I could clear my field from it.
Yeah, that's important. Well, good. This has really been a great talk, Eric, and you've really kind of given me and the listeners a few great tips. And so, I guess as a final question, what do you hope that the readers will take away from reading The Promise of Wholeness?
I hope that with all the different styles, because I used many different styles, practical examples, people volunteered to talk about their story in my book. My kid, who's extremely empathic, talked about what it was like to be a teenage girl and what it was like for her and how she solved it. And so to me, there's practical information and theoretical information that philosophers have been saying. So to me, I try to do like a 360 of all these different places that I've seen where they've been saying the same things, and that hopefully from the examples, from the theory, and what speaks to your heart, because I think I hopefully, you know, can touch your heart with the different stories and examples that you can be moved and really begin to understand some of the deeper processes, how to be truly happy and create more peace.
Oh, that would be great. And, you know, I really appreciate you sharing your time and your insight with the listeners. And it's been very informative, and I've really enjoyed our conversation. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. And I really appreciate the chance to speak to you and all the people that have listened.
Great. Thank you. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Eric Erke. We have been talking about his new book, The Promise of Wholeness, Cultivating Inner Peace, Mindfulness, and Love in a Divided World. His book is available from Amazon.com, and you can also find out more information at www.roman.com, and that's ROWMAN.com, and just type in the title, The Promise of Wholeness. And also, you can follow Eric's blog, which is eric.erke.com, and that's eric.erke.com. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show, and until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.